Hello, and welcome to episode 106 of Motherhood in Hollywood. I'm Heather Brooker. This is a podcast all about entertainment and parenting in Hollywood. Today, I am talking to Melissa Chalsma, the artistic director for the Independent Shakespeare Company in Los Angeles, and we are talking about bringing Shakespeare to life in the park every summer for families to enjoy. And we are also talking about dreams and goals and what is the measure of success. Let's do it.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hey guys, hope you had a wonderful 4th of July. I did. My mom came into town and this is kind of a tricky thing because my mom and I sometimes don't get along, and I realize the irony of me having a podcast all about motherhood when I don't actually ever really talk about my mom or get along really with my mom. But that is a topic for another day when we can delve into the psychosis behind that. But anyway, regardless, my mom was in town and we actually had a really nice week. We went and saw some fireworks and ate way too much food like you do. And I started realizing, like, I'm just feeling so unhealthy and sluggish. And part of it might be that it's like 1,000 degrees in LA this week. And I feel like I can't get moving or motivated or anything. And my pants are tight. But that might have something to do with it. But I just started realizing, like, I'm super unhealthy. And I'm wanting to make some changes in my diet and in my exercise routine. So be on the lookout for that. I'm going to be making some announcements in that in the coming weeks as well to what I'm doing. Will it be lipo? Maybe. Will it just be a full body reconstructive surgery? Perhaps. I don't know. Haven't decided yet. Anyway, hi. Hello. How are you? I hope you guys listened to last week's episode with Alec Baldwin. Wow. If you missed it, go and listen to it. He was so lovely and so generous talking about his experience being the boss on Boss Baby, or playing a boss on Boss Baby, and playing bosses on several different shows and films. So really generous with his time and his knowledge. So make sure you check that out. Also, while you're listening to my backlog of podcasts, make sure you subscribe to Motherhood in Hollywood. If you haven't done it yet, do it. It literally takes 1 second to click a subscribe and then leave me a review. Would you please just say hi? Hello. How are you? I see it. I love it. And it means the world to me if you do that. So, and make sure you follow me at Heather Brooker, which, oh my God, by the way, so excited. I just got verified on Twitter. What? so surprised and so exciting. I know for some people it's not really that big of a deal, but for me, I was like, hey, does this mean I'm a star? Does this mean I've made it? Probably not, but that's okay. But anyway, follow me on Twitter at Heather Brooker, where I sometimes tweet inappropriate things, and also on Instagram at Motherhood in Hollywood and Facebook at Motherhood in Hollywood. And I appreciate it. I do lots of giveaways on my Facebook page every week. Every Thursday, I do a Facebook Live where I give away some stuff, some swag that I got, that I get from parties and events that I get invited to, because hey, what fun is getting free stuff if you can't share it with the people you love? Am I right? I'm always right. As I tell my daughter, I'm always right. So I want to talk about this week's episode because a few weeks ago, Chris and I were invited to go see Shakespeare in the Park here in Los Angeles at Griffith Park. And we were talking and we realized it has been years since we've seen a Shakespeare play or seen Shakespeare performed. And we were both theater majors at one point in college before both, actually, we kind of had very similar paths, if you will. We were both in theater and then switched over to broadcast journalism, which is actually where we met in the broadcasting department. He was in radio and I was in television. But we both still always had a love for theater, a love for performing. And we were excited to go and see this play and take Channing with us. Now, it's an evening play. We weren't sure how she would do, but man, she was a rock star. She sat up and like laughed at the jokes. I mean, she got kind of tired towards the end because it was about 10 o'clock at night, and that's way past her bedtime. But the feeling of sitting in the park with hundreds of other people, maybe even thousands, there was a lot of people there. You could bring snacks and drinks. And so we're sitting there enjoying our cheese plates and sausage and watching my daughter watch Shakespeare be performed was such a full circle moment for me. And I know it was for Chris too, that just sort of reinvigorated my love for theater and for performing and for, you know, just beautifully written, classically written plays. And I'm so thrilled to be able to interview the artistic director, Melissa Chalsma is her name, from the Independent Shakespeare Company here in Los Angeles. And I'm a little embarrassed because I got a little weepy towards the end of our interview because it started bringing up all these nostalgic feelings for me and reminding me of how much I love theater and how much I love performing. So I am absolutely thrilled to share this interview with her, with you. And also, she really has some wonderful things to say about the measure of success. What is your measure of success? When do you think you know you've made it? We're going to talk a little bit about that today. So here is my interview with Melissa Chalsma. So I have to say, I really enjoyed going to your show on Saturday night, and I have been really looking forward to this interview ever since. So Melissa Chalsma, the artistic director of the Independent Shakespeare Company here in Los Angeles, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
I have to say, on many different levels, this was a wonderful show for me to go see. We went and saw Measure for Measure, and we took my four-year-old daughter, Channing.
Oh, great.
And it was the first time she's ever been to a play. It's the first time she's ever been to an outdoor play. And it's the first time she's ever seen Shakespeare. So we were like a little nervous.
Understandably.
She was also staying up past her bedtime. So it was like a whole bunch of unknowns. And she watched the whole thing.
Oh, that's great.
She was captivated. And she laughed when she was supposed to laugh. Wow. And we were like, oh my gosh.
Measure for Measure is not an easy play either. So that's that's a pretty impressive.
That's what great. We thought. We were like Measure for Measure. And honestly, Chris and I both, my husband Chris and I, were theater majors at Oklahoma State, which is funny because we didn't meet in the theater. We actually met in journalism. We had very similar paths, but our paths didn't cross till we were in journalism school. So we're both familiar with Shakespeare, had performed it before, but it had been a long time since we had actually sat down to like really get into a Shakespeare play. And so we were like, how's she going to do? I don't know. But she just like laughed and enjoyed it, sat there eating her goldfish and just had a good old time. And eventually she kind of nodded off on my lap a little bit, but it's so great. Tell me, you've been doing this for a long time. Mm-hmm. What was the prepitus? Is that a word? Did I just make up a word?
I think you precipice? Might have, but so did Shakespeare. So but it's actually
what was
very
the impetus?
Impetus.
That's
there we
what
go.
I'm trying to say.
Sometimes it feels like a precipice.
It does.
So that's
Let's
about
just
right.
Make up words. I do that a lot. What was the impetus? Like, what started all of this?
Well, when I started the company with my husband, David, who you saw in the production the other night, and
tell everybody who he played.
He plays the Duke in Measure for Measure, and he'll be directing Two Gentlemen of Verona, which is the next play in the season. And he and I were actors in New York, and we were mostly out of work. Many actors are. And what we sort of realized at a certain point was that, you know, a lot of us would kind of sit around and complain about not having work. And then we'd complain even more when we finally got work because it wasn't the right work. And at the time, my husband was a private detective as his day job.
What?
and then I ended up working at the same detective agency. A lot of actors did because our jobs was to go undercover in the Chinatown area and Little Italy area and find people selling counterfeit bags, document how many counterfeit bags they were selling, find out where they were hiding the counterfeit. I mean, it was crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And you'd have to put on different disguises because you'd be going down there every day.
Oh my gosh.
So they had a disguise closet in the agency.
Actor's dream though, really.
Yeah. And so a lot of actors would do this job. And sometimes your job would be to sit outside and do surveillance. Mm-hmm. And so you'd be sitting for maybe like 6 hours outside a shop, and it's really hard to be inconspicuous. And my husband at a certain point gave up being inconspicuous, and he would just, didn't put on disc. He still managed to do really well in that job. I don't know how he did it. But he was reading the Village Voice, and they was a theater there called Nada, Totokan Nada, which was this amazing downtown theater. And he was going to present all of Shakespeare's plays in one season. And his space was, he maybe had 11-foot ceilings. It was tiny, tiny, tiny space. And so David was thinking about, what should we put on? And he thought, like, if we were doing that, what would be the most audacious thing to do? And he was thinking about, how would you do a production of Henry V on this 10x10 stage? And it actually would be the perfect play, but
yeah,
because it's about imagination. But right. At the time, he was thinking it was battles. And we didn't participate in that season. And in fact, that season didn't happen, but we did produce Henry V in New York. And We got a group of friends together and said, hey, we're all sort of sitting around out of work and complaining. Let's see what happens if we do something.
Yeah.
And we spent $800 and we worked in this wonderful, crazy space by the guy who later was one of the co-founders of the New York International Fringe Festival, John Clancy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he was running a space downtown. But he didn't want to charge people a lot. This is a long, long intake to this story, but it has a good payoff, I think. So he kept his theater running all the time, and you paid a percentage of your box office. So if 5 people showed up, you paid $10 for that night.
That's nice.
But he had to keep it running basically 24 hours. So our time slot was 10 p.m. Tuesday nights. Ooh. To do our show. And it was after a production of Pigoletto, which was indeed Rigoletto starring a man in a pig suit.
What?
So it would be go Pigoletto and then Henry V.
Wow.
And it was really crazy. And indeed, sort of 5 people would come, and it was freezing. It wasn't heated. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle of February on the Lower East Side of New York. And for some reason, we loved doing it.
Yeah.
And I can't quite, it was... really thrilling to sort of say, we did that. Mm-hmm. We did that. And we didn't wait around for someone to hire us. Because I think that's the most, the stressful thing about being as an actor is you're so dependent on other people's opinion of you.
Yes. And whether or not they mm-hmm. think you're right for the part. You know you're right for the part. You just have to wait for everybody else to decide.
Yeah, and what it's based on is mysterious. Yeah. You don't know. And people go, you're amazing, but you're not,
Right.
And you don't. So I think for us, it was sort of this feeling of, well, whether that was a terrible or great, we made it. We didn't wait for somebody to tell us we could make it.
And that was pretty
intoxicating to say we don't need to wait.
Yeah. I love to hear you say that, because that is what I say a lot on this show. If there's anything, actors listening, moms listening, people who want to take a leap of faith and start a new business, whatever, I always say, don't wait for somebody to give you permission to do it. Don't wait for somebody to cast you. Go and create your own something, create your own path, and I think everything else will fall into line eventually.
Yeah, I think what is really, it's challenging, because I think, especially if you're somebody, regardless of what industry you're interested in, mm-hmm. you have in your mind what success looks like.
Sure, yeah.
And the biggest thing I've had to change is for whatever reason, I've always wanted to be an actor. I don't know why. My family didn't go to the theater. Mm-hmm. I wasn't in theater classes. Mm-hmm. But I cannot remember a time I didn't want to do theater. But I had in my mind for a long time what success in that looked like.
What did it look like to you?
Oh, being on Broadway, getting a Tony Award, casting directors knowing my name, doing feature films.
Sure.
Kind of what would be a very straightforward view of what success was. Mm-hmm. And I held on to that for a long time, even after we'd been producing a while. So I said to this agent I was meeting with that I was able to be producing the plays I want in the way I wanted to produce it with the people I wanted to work with. And he said, why do you need me? And I thought, you're right. I don't need you. I actually have achieved, I replaced what success looked like for me, which isn't to say it's easy, and it's extremely stressful, and we're always broke, and all the things that so many people can relate to. But my idea of what it meant to make a difference doing the work that I love really changed.
Yeah.
And once that fixed in my mind, it explained a lot of things for me. It explained why I had made the choices I'd made. I was really mm-hmm. on the path.
Yeah.
Without realizing it. Because in my mind, I had this very, very vivid picture of what I thought I was supposed to want or what I did want. Yeah. And it turned out that that wasn't what I wanted.
That is so fantastic to hear. And honestly, a reminder that I need to, because I'm going through a lot right now where I'm, you know, what am I doing? Motherhood in Hollywood has been this wonderful success. And I've been, and I don't say that to be braggy, but it, because it kind of caught me off guard. I was like, who's going to listen to me talk forever? And like, you know, who's going to want to be on my show was really it. And I am an actor too. Mm-hmm. My family did not take me really to the theater. I mean, we went to the Nutcracker every year, but really it was not like, theater was a regular part of our lives, but I've always wanted to be an actor. There's something I think inside actors and performers where you have a need to get it out, like whether it's through a comedy piece or a dramatic piece or something like that, where you just have this need to perform and entertain in some way or affect people mm-hmm. with your abilities in some way. So I totally understand that. But then you start thinking, you know, am I a success? I have this great podcast. People listen to it. They seem to enjoy it, but I'm not acting. I'm not acting regularly like I would like to be. For me, that level, that bar would be being a regular on a TV show. Mm-hmm. That's always been my goal. I want to be a series regular on a TV show. And I'm not that. And I've been doing this, you know, God, I think I joined SAG 10 years ago. Mm. So I'm like, at what point do you start to go, well, maybe I change my perspective on what success is, or maybe do you change your dream? You know, that's the question. Like when do you start altering things?
I think that, you know, there was a point where I realized that when I was imagining myself getting a Tony Award or, you know, whatever it was, mm-hmm. what I was really imagining was that I was happy.
Yeah.
It was this feeling associated in that picture was one of joy.
Of joy. Yeah.
And that, you could achieve those things and still not feel joy. So what I was really fantasizing about was a life where I felt fulfilled. And that was when I thought about it that way, things became much more clear. Because it's hard to predict what will fulfill you.
Sure.
So for me, it was sort of, when I thought that, it was became much easier to kind of release that, you know, I don't know, not as successful as my classmates, or I don't, mm-hmm. you know, I don't,
it's hard
need,
not
I don't,
to compare.
You know, it's hard. Yes. It's very hard not to compare yourself to others. I think especially, I struggle with that as an actress, is that as you get older as an actress, the commodity that is you loses value.
Yeah.
There's
Which
sort of
is
less
so
roles,
crazy to
less
me.
Work.
Yeah.
And even especially in Shakespeare, really, I mean, it's a tricky kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you do start, I do think a lot now about, you know, am I fulfilled? If I'm looking at fulfillment as my benchmark, how do I quantify that versus, you know, the chances of me getting a Tony Award diminish by the day. Because you go further and further away from that path.
That.
It's not that it's possible.
It's true. And I hate
but it's
that.
True.
It's true. Yeah.
So, but yet
I feel the
I
same way about
this,
my Academy Award.
That's
I just
right.
see it getting farther and farther away.
It could still happen.
It could still happen. Remember that lady from Titanic?
That's
she was
right.
like 80.
That's right. It could happen.
My husband reminds me of that. He's like, remember the Titanic lady? And I'm like, I don't want it when I'm 80. I want it now.
I know.
Hey, you guys, I want to take just a minute to talk to you about your face. That's right. I want to talk to you about NuDew, how NuDew can help you get radiant and glowing skin, because it all begins with the right products. And NuDew has no toxic chemicals in any of their products. It's a luxury skincare line that offers your skin long-term care to help you look and feel your very best. It's a very simple three-step process. It's the NuDew Natural Beauty System. Cleanse to purify, tone to balance, and moisturize to get that glamorous glow that we all need, right? Go right now to motherhoodinhollywood.com. Click on the NuDew image, and that will take you to the NuDew website where you can select the products that will work best for you. But make sure you enter the code Hollywood at checkout, and you'll get 20% off of your order. What a great deal. NuDew, helping you create a new you.
But so it's challenging, especially I think if you're in industries where the definition of success is pretty narrow. The accepted definition of yes. success is very narrow.
Yes.
You know, I think then it's easy to kind of think yourself into a state of dread.
Yeah.
That you will not achieve your aspirations.
I just want to be able to brag to my friends that I did something that they didn't. Is that terrible?
No.
I just want to brag to my friends.
Being competitive is a really,
it's a big motivator.
It's a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, you can be competitive and still be kind.
Totally.
But that's my true. My competitive nature has led me to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
That I just, you know, it is just not okay with me if I'm not doing the best.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I've never achieved the best, so it keeps me getting up in the morning.
Keep going.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me then how you transitioned out to LA with your Shakespeare.
Yeah, so we had done a few shows in New York, and we'd actually had a chance to tour a couple things to smaller theaters in Europe, which was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I got pregnant with our daughter. And we, at the same time I got pregnant, we had been living in a basement apartment of a brownstone. And our landlord said, I want to move into the basement and rent the top. And you're going to need to move out. So we had an $1,100 one-bedroom garden apartment in Brooklyn. And we were looking and we realized there was no way we could afford anything
so
like that yeah. anywhere else in yeah. New York at the time that we could live. I was, I think we were both mostly working as caterers. I was pregnant and my sister was living in LA and she sent me a little note that said, come to LA, the streets are paved with gold. And then she sent me a calendar and it said, you know, June 24th, pick up gold off streets. She said, you can stay with us as long as you want. So
oh,
I was,
what an awesome sister.
She is pretty, my sister is very awesome. So we moved out here and I think maybe almost 4 months later had the baby and we're kind of just picked up from here producing theater here because what else were we supposed to do? Now we were just unemployed actors in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It was totally different. At that point I had done a certain amount of regional theater work, but I couldn't really picture how to do that with a child.
Yeah.
I know a lot of my friends do that and I'm amazed that they can do that. I couldn't. I'm too anxious. I'm a very anxious parent. It became really clear really early that that was not something I could do.
It would
do
be hard
and maintain
to be away
my happiness
every night for rehearsals, and then you got the whole length of the show run or whatever. I don't know that I could do that, and I don't know. I mean, I could probably work it out. My husband's pretty great about helping, but I don't know that I would want to do that. I would miss her so much, and I would hate sort of dumping all of that responsibility on him while I'm gone for months.
Yeah,
you know?
So I think that was became really evident to me, and so we were just looking for so we decided to start producing here at that kind of level of, you know, we're doing really small theaters, you know, that kind of out here it's the 99 seat theater, so it's the smaller theaters, and then decided, well, what if we did it free and outdoors? There's there were some theaters doing that here, but that was something I'd done a lot of with summer Shakespeare, because Shakespeare had always been my favorite playwright,
right.
My favorite thing to perform in, and it just kind of fit really well. Just somehow, everything. It was one of those things where it was lucky. We found a good venue. We had a good group of people.
Has it been in the same venue ever since?
No, we actually did our very first outdoor performance was in a Franklin Canyon Park, and we just did a weekend, which is a really beautiful park.
Mm-hmm.
And then for, I want to say 6 years, was it? We were at Barnstable Park, East Hollywood,
mm-hmm.
which is a really nice spot, but we outgrew it.
Yeah.
Our crowds were too big. And then, so in 2010, with the help of Rex and Parks, the department, we were able to move to where we are now, where you saw us the other night in the
park.
Old zoo area in Griffith
Park. It's the perfect spot for
mm-hmm.
it, mostly because it's also 5 minutes from my house.
That's the best.
In
that
LA
is the
is
best
so far away.
Situation.
And I'm like, where is it? I'll be there. but also, it's something that's really needed in LA. It's the perfect place for it. It gets cool in the evening, mm-hmm. like we were talking about, and there's no bugs outside, which is great. So it's like everybody can just go and get their excuse me, get their blankets, bring their special brownies. I know that there was some stuff floating around when we were there.
Oh,
we
where's like, there? Some on? Special brownies. I don't.
We were like, some people came to play.
I have no knowledge of that behavior.
No knowledge of special brownies
no
at the outdoor Shakespeare.
Whatsoever. I deny all knowledge of that.
But I think it was just what was great about it. And Chris and I were talking about this is the.
I love that. People are going to Shakespeare and.
And gang
getting
high.
High.
Of course. What, I mean, it's LA. I feel like everybody's high
really
all the time.
Crazy. Drive like, safely, everyone.
Yes, please. But no, we were talking about how there was this sense of community and a sense of fandom because no performance, you know, it's very rare to go to anything that's outdoors where people are not like, you know, joking around or talking or laughing. Everybody was watching the show. Everybody was watching. They were laughing at the appropriate moments. Like they were invested in what you were doing. And that to me was such a wonderful feeling and like must make you so proud to be like, you're creating something that people truly love.
It's amazing. And we just really, I have, you know, performed Shakespeare lots of places in America. I mean, that's such a huge American tradition, the Outdoor Shakespeare Festival. Even my husband's British, David's British, but even more so, I mean, there's a lot of that in England, but he really thought, he's like, every American city has a Shakespeare Festival.
Yeah.
Of course they do.
It's a big deal.
Of course. We have to
it makes us feel fancy.
It makes us feel like we're
actually actors.
but I have found that the audiences in LA are, at least in our performances, what's been so special is it's extremely diverse on every level.
I did notice
from
that.
From small children to older adults, from people from all different economic walks of life, all different ethnic backgrounds, different, you know, some people have never seen a play before. Some people are avid theater fans. Are so amazed, kind of. I look out sometimes and I think this is like being at a Dodgers game.
Yeah.
This is nuts. And they're here to watch a Shakespeare play. And like you said, for the most part, special brownies notwithstanding, people really do come and enjoy the production and they listen to the language
they
follow the action. And it isn't just about, oh, we're, you know, it is nice to go to those summer events where you're just on the, you know, eating your grapes and cheese and kind of half listening to the music.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I don't feel like that's generally true.
Like
generally,
nobody
people
was
are
on
really
their phone.
Into it.
Nobody
so
was like having a side conversation.
I have seen people being very romantic.
Oh,
in the back, sometimes
I'm
see some very romantic action under the blankets.
They were the ones with the brownies. Let's be honest.
I don't know. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah,
I might try that one
little
time.
Little Shakespeare in the park and have the like the romance.
So it is pretty amazing to think that Shakespeare, this long, long dead author, is kind of the catalyst for this amazing community events.
Yeah. And you guys do it is it Wednesday through Sunday?
It's Wednesday through Sunday.
Throughout
the summer. We will be there through September 3rd. So we play through Labor Day weekend. And there's one week in the middle there where we're changing the shows over where it's just Saturday and Sunday. But other than that, it's Wednesday through Sunday. And we have the plays. And then on certain nights, there's pre-show performances by other groups. We have workshops for families. So you can bring your kids and they get to know the play and tour backstage.
Oh, neat.
We're gonna do one night you're gonna be able to register to vote. One night we're gonna do a write your elected official night and we'll pay for the stamps and you can just write, you know, hopefully about how important the arts are to you. That would be a night, would be like what we would like, but you can say whatever you want because we always want the audience to feel very free. So we've got a lot of sort of events going around coming, you know, during the summer that hopefully makes everyone in the community feel welcome and that there's something for that appeals to everybody. And I think that's our approach for the plays too, is on a given night, we want people to find something in that production that is for them.
That resonates with them. How do you guys choose your plays? Because Measure for Measure is obviously not one of the ones most people are familiar with. It's one of the, I don't want to say lesser known, but
I think B-side, it speaks for maybe? Sure. It's, yeah, maybe. It's definitely less performed. For
yeah,
sure.
It's less performed. Sure. How do you guys decide what you want to do? Just sort of whatever is speaking to you?
I think so. And I think we usually look at, for me, a lot of times when I'm trying to think about what to do next, I get attracted by the idea of a certain actor playing a role because we work with the same group of people.
Oh, you do?
Over time. Uh-huh. So it's not kind of, I know some companies like have sort of official membership. It's not like that, but we are definitely an artists collective. And I think that shows up in the work. It's a group of people that are very invested in the mission of the organization, which isn't, you know, always a prerequisite, but for us it really is, because you have to it's an effort to get things up in the park, mm-hmm. as a performer, and you have to really believe in access, you know? And so I think everyone in the team right now they really appreciate that this is about making something that's accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. They're community minded. They love classical theater. They love working on it in the way we work on it. So it's this kind of a collective group of people.
You also have a very diverse cast as well. Mm-hmm. Is that intentional?
Yeah, sure. Yes. Yeah. I think that's something that is hard to do unintentionally.
Yeah.
I mean, in the sense that theater typically is not a particularly diverse place.
Right. I think especially with Shakespeare.
And I think the Los Angeles theater community is sort of just waking up to that and sort of going, hey, wait a minute, we should probably serve our whole community. Mm-hmm. But for us, ever since we started performing outdoors, we really wanted to have the sense that we were performing for all of Los Angeles. And so we were really conscious about how can we branch out of our social circle, which at the time was really based on maybe people I went to graduate school with.
Sure.
Or, you know, kind of a more limited friends group. So we were really thought about tactics about how do we broaden our circle, spheres of influence, so that we're able to bring in different kind of artists, different people. But it was definitely conscious to do that. And a large part of it is that we really want to have an audience that's everybody.
Yeah.
I think that's very powerful to be in a group of people laughing at the same joke. And you kind of go, oh, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. We're all laughing at the same thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that say something about what's real?
And the arts and, mm-hmm. and the power of the written word. Mm-hmm. How do you keep it free? Because nothing is free in LA.
Nothing is free.
And it's this is really such hard. A wonderful undertaking and a beautifully done production. The fact that you guys are able to keep it free is incredible.
Well, thank you. It's challenging.
Yeah.
It's really challenging. And it has to be free, because if it's not free right away, you're going to cut out everyone who doesn't go to theater normally.
Yeah.
And for us, I'm hoping people come. Maybe they come the next summer. Then they think, oh, well, maybe I should go see that play. That looked interesting.
And I'll bring my friends.
And theater's for me.
Yeah.
Theater's something that belongs to all of us. Mm-hmm. We all can have it. So for us, it has to be free, because access is our primary mission. But it is definitely challenging. California is a very challenging state for arts funding. It's very low.
That's so interesting.
Per capita. It's maybe, I think at one point it was second from the bottom.
That's crazy. This is where Hollywood is. This is where the arts and entertainment capital should be, right?
You would think that. Yes. And then in the state, Los Angeles is the lowest city. So municipally, there's lots of reasons for that. Yeah. It's very cash strapped. There's many, many reasons for this. We have some great municipal arts organizations. They're just not like as well funded as some other things. Mm-hmm. And I think Los Angeles also has a very odd sort of point of view about philanthropy. I don't think it has the same philanthropic traditions as some other cities I've been in. It's, you know, where people are sort of, I'm invested in this idea of a symphony for St. Louis.
Yeah, sure.
It's a little harder, I think, to sell that in Los Angeles, maybe because we're so spread out geographically.
And maybe because everybody works in the industry already, where they feel like, oh, if I'm producing this movie, I'm already invested in the arts.
Maybe that is. And I was wondering too recently, I was thinking about that, you know, with film and television, they're commodities in a way. You know, what do we are in a community where on the news, you know, NPR reports on box office.
Yeah.
That's like a very local news station say this opened with a. So this idea that the arts should be attached to money, I think, is very present here.
Yeah.
And theater, even if you, unless you're producing a, you know, a commercial run of a play on Broadway or, you know, Pantages mm-hmm. or something, you're not going to make money. You're not even going to make enough to cover your costs.
No.
It's just that that's just the reality of the situation. And I think here there's a little less understanding of the fact that plays need to be actually funded because you're not going to be able to do it through box office.
So
let alone if it's free, and then you really can't do it.
And then you really can't. So people can make donations then to the Shakespeare Company directly, or do you get it funding from like the Arts Council? Or
we get we have a really wide range of funding. We're very lucky. We got an NEA grant this year. That may be obviously the last year the NEA gives anything for some time. We get funding from the state, from the city, Department of Cultural Affairs. So we get a lot of funding. That adds up, the government funding we get adds about 10%.
Yeah.
So the rest of it comes from
donations,
fundraising, either individual donations or different grants and different foundations. And about 60% of our funding comes from individuals. And those are donations ranging from 50 cents to, you know, $5,000, or, you know, it's like a really broad range. And we do take collections at the park. But so we get, it's all different. Basically, any way someone wants to give us money,
we'll make
work. And we'll put it on stage at some point.
Well, I hope that if anything people glean from this episode as well, and everything we've been talking about too, that they support their local arts, support your local, if you have a Shakespeare company in your town, if you're here in LA and you haven't been to see the Independent Shakespeare Company at Griffith Park, go and do it. It's going to be there all throughout the summer. And you've got several days to choose from. There's no excuse not to go and bring your friends, because I'll tell you, after that, we decided that we're going to make it like a family tradition. Like every year.
That's great.
We're going to keep, I'm not going to cry, but like, we're going to keep taking her because it was such a special
thing. Oh my
God.
I'm
totally crying.
Thank you so much.
I'm totally crying. I don't know why. Anyway, but it was such a special thing because we're both such like, you know, fans of theater, and I just, I think it's wonderful.
Thank you. And that is one of the most amazing things for all of us is to see, we've seen children grow up now because we've been doing it.
What,
maybe
20,
like 15 years in
LA
City Parks and 10 years in Griffith Park. And you see the same families every year and you watch these kids grow up.
There was
a couple that got engaged on our stage at intermission because that's where they had their second date.
Aww.
And then last year they brought back their new baby.
Oh my gosh.
So
it's
like amazing to see, like, to be woven into the fabric of people's lives, to go back to that idea of what is success.
Yeah.
I can't imagine anything. I mean, that is such a gift for me to be able to say, I've helped build this thing that my community feels so much ownership of, that they've made it part of their family's life.
And I think
it's incredible.
If anything, you should take away from that, that is absolutely the measure of success, because people, it's a milestone. It's a moment in time. It is a bridge, you know, in the community. And that to me is success. That's a legacy. That's something that you can really embrace.
Thank you.
And who needs a Tony or an Oscar anyway, right?
Right.
They give those to anybody.
Tonys. They just collect dust. One more thing for me to clean.
Right, exactly. Who needs that? Melissa, thank you so much
for
coming to be on
thank
my show
so
and making
me
cry at the end. I don't know what's going on. You guys, I'm going to put up information about the Independent Shakespeare Company and their season up on motherhoodinhollywood.com, as well as other information about more about their shows and that sort of thing. And thank you again for
You're
being
so
on
welcome.
My show.
And I hope everyone comes and joins us and
yes.
says hi afterwards.
Please do. Please do. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful week. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye. Balls.